Hey, Printhusters, welcome back to this show. We've got another incredible episode with Justin Rip out of Rip Print. Why do we have him on? Because he has grown up to around 30 people and I guesstimate a few million in revenue. But he really shares a lot of the lessons learned from that journey, you know, around the 10 to 15 employee mark. And then what he's starting to look forward to. And I think more importantly than that even is what he's spending time thinking about, like what consumes his mind, which has definitely shifted from these different phases of the business.
I wanted Justin to just ditch work and go have a Ferris Bueller day off. So we talked a little bit about that, but pretty cool to see the success of his business and then what he's doing now to continue to grow. You can see it in his energy and the last name Rip is pretty sweet. So this will be a good episode, but this podcast would not be possible without our amazing sponsors. First and foremost, we have GraphicSource. If you need a solution to improve efficiency and reduce costs in your art department, GraphicSource is the solution for you. They plug and play with Printavo and other shop management softwares, and it comes to SEPs, mockups, creative art, order management, embroidery, digitizing, back office admin, and customer service. There's no better company in the industry to work with. I just shot him a message the other day that said I desperately needed another artist to work for us, you know, just for 2 or 3 weeks. And they had someone staffed within a couple of days. They have over 40 years in the game. They really know and understand shops' needs and have a proven track record of success. Hit them up. Use code PrintavoPod24 for your first vector, SEP, or embroidery order and get 50% off.
DTF Superstore and BMAC Industries. That's BMAC Industries. BMAC Industries put out a really cool dryer shaker piece of equipment that they are selling through dealers. You could check it out at bmacindustries.com. They've got innovative solutions for the DTF printing industry, and DTFSuperstore.com has all of the consumables and equipment and help and assistance and education and even a really cool trade show to be able to help you learn a lot more and buy stuff for your DTF side, which Justin actually is headfirst dove into. So that's really cool.
Those that don't know, DTF Superstore supports Campus Inc. and they've been with me along my journey, taking care of us and really, really appreciate the work that they've done. And so if you're interested, hit them up. And their new dryer is pretty wicked. So Bruce, I want to tell you about this new software platform, another software platform. It's cooler than Printavo, actually. It's called DGI Apparel, and it was built by a group of MIT engineers. And Bruce, I know you went to U of I, but MIT is way more smarter. And so they actually have a background in screen printing. DGI allows you to connect your accounts with Sanmar, Alpha Broder, SNS, and a bunch of other suppliers to compare prices, inventory, and shipping across every apparel supplier on one website. You don't need multiple monitors. You can literally do it on one website. The average shop spends 2 hours purchasing every day, and DGI will cut that time in half. So ask yourself, what would you do with an extra hour every day? And what's actually interesting is they didn't give us a promo code because DGI is free. And it's always going to be free for shops to use. That's right. It costs you $0 forever. And so if you're not already using DGI, you're wasting your own time and money. Sign up today at dgiapparel.com. Tell them that we sent you and join the 1,500 other shops that are saving in time and money on their purchasing. Thanks so much, Ian and the team. They were at the trade show and I think they were wearing safety vests with their lame freaking MIT looking booth. Love them.
Justin is occasionally cleaning screens, so it's not fully a thing in the past, but he enjoys it and or just has to do it when someone's out. But EasyWay is there to help with their innovative formulas, which are designed to work quickly and effectively. So you can spend less time cleaning and more time creating. Or in Justin's case, going to the gym and eating some fat ribeyes. Plus, EasyWay is passionate about empowering printers of all skill levels. They have tons of helpful resources and expert advice actually on their website too. So just easyway.com to help you succeed in printing. Last but not least, Multicraft Daddy. Multicraft underscore daddy. If you need ink supplies or a daddy, Multicraft screen printing and digital supplies have been around for 50 plus years. 50 years. That's a long time. They've been providing the industry with top brands at competitive pricing. And if you mention the Printavo Pod, that gets you 10% off your first order. And if you DM Multicraft underscore daddy, send him your email address. He's sending all kinds of really awesome stuff out, including PMI tape. And Yeah, sure. A nice comment. He's surpassed. We're just going to use that word. He surpassed 1,000 followers. So incredible.
His content game is good. We're proud of you, Dave.
Hell yeah, Dave. Up. All right. All right. Let's jump into it. All right. Justin Rip of Rip Print. Sorry you had to deal with some tornadoes last time. We had to shuffle things around. But you guys are all okay. Shop's okay.
All okay. Shop's okay. Employees are okay. Back to business as usual.
Do you have a plan B? Being in an area like yours that, you know, that where you're worried about that water?
We have hurricane plans, but, you know, there's nothing you can do for tornadoes. Nobody's set up for that, especially in Florida. We have no basements. The best that we can do is make sure we have everything, you know, unplugged, anything that's hardwired in, you know, turn those breakers off, get anything up off the floor in case there's any kind of flooding. But I mean, if a tornado really came for our building, we would be in bad shape.
Interesting. Have you been affected by flooding in your shop before? Like, knock on wood, everything's been good?
No, we've never been affected by that.
It's crazy. You know, I'm in the Facebook groups and every couple of years there'll be like a shop that had a fire or a flood, and you just don't think about that stuff until it's like you. I don't know. I was just talking to a shop that had to completely rebuild from a fire, and it's like, oof. Do we really actually unplug our flash units? Like, I don't know. That stuff's scary.
I mean, we've had a couple of close calls while using equipment, but not like anything standing idle. You know, when we had manual presses, leaving a pallet under a flasher, and you get a little flame from that after a while, or we have a flashback unit from Workhorse. If that's not timed correctly and it comes out and the table goes up. And so we've had a couple of close calls. I couldn't imagine. It'd be devastating if, you know, the shop went down and all the employees, you know, not being able to come to work. Or
have you
that'd be a mess.
So you have that shuttle flash on your Workhorse still? Is that
we're done.
We had one on a Lawson Trooper, and this is old press, and I think it would light up a shirt on fire like once every 6 to 8 months. Like, it was awful. Fires, yeah. Tornadoes, acts of God. Okay. Ironically, your last name is Rip. What a great name for Rip Print. In like 60 seconds, give us your backstory.
All right. So Rip Print started when I was working in nightclubs in downtown West Palm Beach. Seems like we always needed some t-shirts or embroidered hats. I had a friend that was in the embroidery business. He had a couple of Stitch by Stitch franchises in a mall. So I'd always go to him when we needed t-shirts. And it seemed like wherever he was getting the t-shirts from, either the quality was poor, it took too long, and it just seemed super expensive. So me having this great idea, hey, I'm just going to print the t-shirts myself. I bought an Anajet MP5 DTG printer. I set it up in a spare bedroom in my house, and we started printing t-shirts there. Quickly, we needed a second DTG printer. So we set that up there too. I actually have a picture of that I can show you guys. That's what two Anajets in a spare bedroom in a townhouse looks like.
And Justin, not much has changed because there's a DTF in your office too right now,
and
right?
Now there's a DTF printer still in my office. And there's another DTF printer on the other side of the door to my office. And on a wall right over there is a couple of Brother GTXs with embroidery machines. So we just kept growing. Eventually, we had to get out of my house. We were no longer printing shirts for the parties that we were throwing in nightclubs. We were printing shirts for everybody. Sure. So being in the hospitality scene in West Palm Beach and working in the popular places, we met a lot of people, a lot of business owners. So it was easy to translate those relationships from fun and partying into business relationships. And from there, it just kept growing and growing and growing to be what it is today. And now we're just under 10,000 square feet. And I think we just hired our 30th employee. So we have 30 employees on the payroll. Right? I just did payroll and I saw it's 30 employees. It's a lot.
When you think about hiring an employee, I was just texting with Bruce. We were just texting with a couple shops. Do you look at like revenue per employee? Like for every employee, I want to do this much in revenue. Like, is it $200,000? You know, if you have 30 employees, or you have $4, $5, $6 million shop, how do you think of like adding people?
I'll be honest. I wish I was that detailed about it. It seems like employees come on when it's our output is suffering comparatively to our demand. It's like, okay, what do we have to add? Do we need to add more hours in the embroidery shop? So do we need one employee for that? Do I need to buy another heat press and add another employee to press DTF? Do we need to buy another screen print press and then add, you know, two employees to run that? I've never really sat down and done it numerically, which I probably should, but it just hasn't been that way. Since we started so small with two people in a spare bedroom, it was like, okay, well, the next thing we need is we need our own little space. Then we need our own screen print press. Then we need two employees. Just like, what do you need next? You keep adding it. We've never done it like mathematically.
Do you feel like at 30 people, you said, okay, I think we're at a good spot? Because I remember at 30 people for us, it really started to push the boundary of needing management, which was another more expensive layer to be able to continue from there. And it felt like, oh, maybe 20 to 30 is a good sweet spot. We need to really push on until we think about leveling up again or adding more team members.
Okay, that's a great question. And for me, it's a double-edged sword because I always have gotten to a point where we said, okay, we're going to add one more DTG printer and we're going to be good. And then we get that DTG printer and said, okay, we're going to add one more screen print press and we're good. Yeah. And then we say, all right, well, we can't grow anymore because there's no more space available in the warehouse complex we're in. And then what do you know? The neighbor leaves and I could take another 3,000 square feet. So what are we going to put in there? Another screen print press. So I always get to a point where I say, once we install this, that's going to be it. We're going to be done. And then we get the idea to add something else. Then DTF steps on the scene. So we start adding DTF machines and heat presses. And so, I mean, 30 is a lot, but I feel like managing the entire company of 30 people is actually easier for me than when the company was like 8 or 10 people. Because like you said, with management, when I had 8 or 10 people, I had to manage 10 people. Now with 30 people, I really only have to manage like 4 or 5 that are managing the rest. But as we grow, I feel like if I added, we have 3 auto presses. I feel like if I added a fourth, I would probably need like a second set of eyes in that department because I have one guy that oversees everything that goes on all 3 presses. And sometimes it's totally smooth, but sometimes it could be a lot depending on if we have a lot of little jobs or a lot of big jobs. If we added a fourth press, I think I would need to add another manager. And that is an expensive position to fill.
What do you feel like consumes your mind now then at this size with 30, you know, I would guess, and you don't have to say unless you want to, but maybe a few million in revenue, 30 people, like what is the mental focus that you want to improve upon or you work on every day? Maybe that's not every day, but it's like it consumes 70 to 80% of your brain, your thought process.
100% of the time, 80% of my thought is taken up by financial. Are we taking in enough revenue to support this? Luckily for us, we work hard and the answer is always yes. Right now it's margins. So I have actually started to get a lot more, I don't know what the right word is I'm looking for, but I'm analyzing a lot of analytical. I'm analyzing a lot of things and seeing where we can save money, where we can make more money, where we can increase prices, where we could decrease some cost. Because as we get busier and busier, I know that labor is not going down. Like money, the financial part of labor is not going down. People are not working for less money. They're working for more money. And it's as we get busier, I need more and more people. So we have to find other areas to do that. So my main concerns are we taking in enough jobs at the right margin to keep moving the way that we're moving.
And so it sounds like a combination of sales and more so financial projections, which is kind of interesting because we did have a fractional CFO on and he was like, yeah, this is sort of the size where I help businesses like yours, you know, be able to take you from, you know, you thinking about all these financial projections and sales projections versus me, you know, and then I kind of fee or funnel back ideas to you. Have you thought about that or does it not make sense for now? Or I'm just curious on the practical aspects now.
Any idea makes sense now. I didn't think that we were going to take it from me and my partner Jay in a spare bedroom in my house to a team of 30 people cranking out thousands of items a day. So I mean anything makes sense. Like it doesn't make sense that we got here, but we did, so anything is possible.
Steven, I mean, you were kind of talking about that too, how you were focused on that. And I remember being so focused on that and when to bring on people, when, if we have too many people, do we have the sales to support it, and so on and so on. But with that said, do you think that 70%, so you said that's what it is now. Do you think when you were half the size you are, so let's say from the 10 to 15 person area, do you remember what consumed your mind or what you were always thinking about then?
It was getting the product out the door. We were taking in jobs. And when you're small and your overhead's low, you don't need a lot of money to run the company. And the jobs were coming in. And my main concern was, you know, how are we going to get these shirts printed and out the door in our 7 to 10 day deadline? So it was, you know, a lot of work, a lot of hours in the shop. Luckily, we had some good people in the very beginning to help get us here.
What was the transition then between, like, what forced you out of thinking about getting the jobs out the door to this sort of sales finance thought process you're in now?
Having enough people and equipment to get the jobs out the door. Now I don't actually have to do it. I used to be on press all day, every day, while still trying to generate sales and run the business itself. Now there's, as I sit here talking, there's many machines and many employees working and going through all of the procedures that we put into place. So I'm not really worried about product getting out the door anymore because we do move pretty fast. So now it's more about getting the right amount of jobs with the right margins in to keep it going.
And you're good at letting go from, you know, making sure. Oh, okay.
I am now, but it took a lot of breathing to, because I started, you know, so small that I always ordered the shirts. I always received the shirts. I always printed the shirts. I always boxed the shirts up. I always printed the shipping labels. But as I grew, each one of those tasks had to be handed off to another employee at some point or another. And, you know, obviously you're worried about them screwing it up. And I found that, like, we just got to show them how to do it. And if they screw it up, then we got to figure out how to fix it. So we just kept letting it go like that. And now we have good employees that, you know, follow a certain procedure that we had. But because when I was coming up doing it on my own with very few people, we didn't really have a procedure. It was just, you know, every man did what they did and we got the job done. So relinquishing control was extremely difficult. And that was probably around the 5 or 6 employee mark where I finally started to remove myself from certain tasks.
But in my notes, actually, I have from a pre-interview, were you cleaning screens recently too?
Yeah, I clean screens all the time.
Just for the the meditation or like the calming.
It just needed to get done. Our cleaning guy was on vacation or something. Screens were piling up, so me and the screen print shop manager Louie, he went and, you know, he got all the tape off them. I got them in the dunk tank and started blowing them all out.
You may have said this already, but are you in the shop 5 days a week?
Yeah, I'm in the shop Monday through Friday.
Why?
I mean, I'm not in the shop physically working, but I'm here on site 5 days a week.
Have you ever thought about not coming in?
Sometimes there's days that I don't come in and I'll work from home.
Okay, so here's my question, kind of how I want to position this is, why in a small business is there this stigma that the owner has to be there 5 days a week, but at a Jimmy John's, Jimmy ain't there every day?
Right. I mean, well, that's part of my relinquishing control. I like to be here. I like to oversee things. A lot of people come here. I have meetings all the time with clients that come by. I do a lot of sales too. So I'm very, very involved in all of the selling. So I do meet a lot of clients here, but I do like to work from here. I'm not as productive when I work from home.
Steven's got a out of shop challenge, or I feel like you need a name for this. Like, you know, not being there challenge. Like, can you accomplish 1 day a week in doing something? It could be working at home. It could be, I don't know.
Oh, for sure.
Golfing or whatever.
For sure I could. There's days that I don't come in. I mean, for the most part though, I'm here 5 days a week, usually here by about 7:30, 8 o'clock, and stay till about 4:30 before I got to go pick up the kids.
Justin, you said something there. You said, like, I like to be in control. I think a lot of business owners will say exactly the same thing. And I've been asking this question a lot to shops lately is, do you go in every day? Have you ever thought about not going in? Why do you have to go in every day? Why do you think as, like, small business owners, we do that to ourselves?
I don't know. Cause I know that on days that I don't come in, things run fine. If I take a vacation. Like we took the kids, me and another owner, we took our kids to Disney and we weren't here for a Thursday and a Friday. And when we came in Monday, it was fine. Business as usual. But I do still feel like I should be at work every day.
Do you think it's a mental, like, if I'm not at work, you're like guilty? Like, I should be there right now because my team's there right now. Like, is there a little bit of shame of like...
Yeah, that could be, because there's definitely a part of me that says that I will do anything in the shop whenever it needs to be done. Like, there's nothing that my employees do that I haven't done for years or will do at the drop of a hat. Like, if, you know, an operator called out and we got a big project to go, I'll jump on press and I'll be printing that day, just like my partners will. And our third partner in embroidery is in embroidery every day, no matter what. He comes to work every day.
So you think there's some, like, it's not that you owe it to them, but you owe it to the business.
I guess. I feel like if I'm not seen in the shop often, it's like you wonder, does your boss even care?
Oof. Let's go there. Does your boss even care? Do your employees actually care if you're there every day? If we were to poll all 30 of them?
No, probably not. Probably not.
You know what I found out, which was super interesting, is that they almost want, so some of them wanted me, like when I was like, all right, I'm actually going to, you know, take this one off, they'd be like, wow, that's awesome. Super happy. Like, you should be doing that. And two of them said that, two of them were more in the leadership role. I didn't really, I obviously remember it because I'm repeating it now, but I didn't internalize it.
I think that we make up this story. This is my theory. As business owners, we have this control problem. And then we think we have to be there all the time. And we make up this story like our employees are going to judge us if we're not there at any time, because we have to be leading from the front. We have to be supermen and superwomen. And 15, 20 years go by and, you know, you've just been in the shop all the time. So
no, I'm going to agree with you 100% that the employees probably work just as well, if not better, when I'm not around. Because I mean, if I don't come in, the building's still standing, it's still taken care of. So, but yeah, a part of me just likes to be here in the building and oversee, you know, my whole operation. I mean,
it's your kingdom.
Why would I not? It's like, I grew this, you know, with the partners from its infancy. Like, why would I not want to see it continue to run? Like, sometimes I'll just do a lap through the whole place, through all five warehouse bays, and just, you know, I'm amazed. Every machine's moving, every employee's working. It's like, wow, we did this. So yeah, I enjoy being here. Honestly, if it were up to me, I would print all day. I would get out of the computer. I would get out of the computer. I wouldn't talk to any clients. I would just print all day. And I would probably print on, we have a couple M&Rs and a workhorse. I would probably print on the workhorse all day too.
All right. Now you're Justin Lawrence is listening to this, just getting all hot and bothered because you said that. him and all other four people that have him. Sorry, Tyler. For a second, if you could ditch work for the day, if you could ditch work today and do, if your business is running really well, and if you could ditch work today and do anything you wanted, what would you do?
Probably go hit the gym and go eat a steak. I could just do anything. If I could just leave work, if I could just leave work,
Diet Coke.
Yeah. If I could just leave work right now. Yeah. If I could just leave work right now and do anything, I'd probably hit the gym and then go get a big steak. And then, I don't know, maybe go home and get caught up on laundry while the kids are still at daycare. Oof. So I could actually get the house clean, maybe.
Why don't you do that?
Maybe.
Ferg's our residential shop therapist.
Here's the thing. Like, we all work so hard to do all of these things, and then we forget to give ourselves the reward of, yeah, your employees don't want you there all day. They want you to be having fun because you've earned it, because they know that if they call you, you are going to be there in a heartbeat. And you should, on a Wednesday, go work out, eat a steak, go home, do laundry so you could spend more time with the kids.
I'm not saying that you're wrong. I usually work out in the morning before work, but didn't have a chance today. Maybe I will do that. Maybe I'll leave early, go to the gym. I'll send you guys a text, picture of me at the gym, so you know what happened.
Let's go.
But the other part of me, like, I don't wake up and say like, damn, I have to go to work today. Like, it's not like coming to work for me is not a chore. It's not like, it's just, I wake up and I go to work and I tackle the day's challenges and I leave work and I don't ever say, I wish I didn't have to go to work today.
Business is play for you.
I guess.
That's kind of sick.
What would you tell your, like, that when you were back, because I think most shops are around maybe call it 5, 10, 15 people or so. What would you tell that version of Justin based on what you know now?
I'd tell him to get organized. The biggest problem that we had was organization in growth. We grew and we tried to grow fast, which is fine. But when we at that stage of 10 or 15 employees, we didn't have solid organization, systems, procedures, and it hindered our growth probably because we had to replace a lot of, you know, bad product because we didn't have the proper check-in system. We didn't have the proper art proofing system. So I would tell at that point in the game, that's when you really need to get organized. Because if you're not super organized with 10 or 12 employees, you're going to be a mess with 30.
So Justin, were you the guy that installs? Are you the organized dude that is putting in processes and procedures? Or did you have to find someone on your team knowing that you weren't that? Can you talk to us about that a little bit? I think there's a lot of wisdom there.
Okay, so I wore so many hats and I did so many things in so many different departments that it wasn't really possible for me to make some kind of a centralized process system. So I brought someone on, a woman named Amy. She had worked in another apparel company and she came in super detailed, super organized, and she got us all of these policies, these procedures.
Wait, when did you bring her in?
I brought her in probably 2022.
What was the business like then? Yeah. Like revenue?
I was probably only about 40% of the revenue I'm doing now. Mm-hmm. Maybe half the employees. She like helped tie it.
So.
Yeah, about 15 employees is probably fair. She helped tie it all in together and give us the policies and procedures. And she was overly detailed with everything. So I definitely think that she's a main part of why the business grew the way it did, because she helped us get super organized. Printavo helped a lot too. Before we used Printavo, everything was, you know, written on a piece of paper and dry erase boards. So Printavo helped a ton.
I think the biggest thing that I hear there though, Justin, and I have to commend you, is like a huge amount of self-awareness.
Yeah. Like to bring in Amy.
Yeah. Amy, if you're listening to this, we love you. For all the shops out there that have Amy's, you are very much loved. But the fact that you are like, I'm not the processes and procedures guy. I'm the visionary. I'm the workhorse. I'm doing all these other things. I'm going to go find someone that's an integrator, an implementer, an organizer. A lot of shops don't have that self-awareness or are just starting to realize like, ooh, it's not me, right? And so what was it like to find her, train her? Did you have to pay her really well to start? Because it sounds like that was a really key.
We paid her pretty good as far as training her. There was nothing to really train. It was a position that didn't really exist. She immediately came in and she handled all of the ordering, the receiving, the shipping. These were just things that like we were just doing as they were needed. Like,
wait, Amy was full time or she was a consultant?
Amy was full time. Amy was full time employee.
Oh, okay.
But did she also build an organizational flow, like processes, procedures, documentation, that kind of stuff? Or
yes. Yeah. She helped with all of that. Yes. We worked on it together, but she was definitely the organized one to help us put the procedures into place.
So at Campus Inc, I can build tons of Zaps. I can build processes. I can do lots of stuff, but our CFO is basically our COO and he's the one that keeps everyone on track because I'm just too much of a squirrel. Moving in too many directions. And so I think you got to have that person in your shop, whoever that person is. They almost have to be the opposite of you, right? You can't go hire an equivalent of yourself. You need to find who that is. Bruce, who do you think that was early at Printavo for you?
Me, I guess. I mean, I think Peter on our tech side wanted to handle more of it, but I was definitely still trying to keep my hand in that pot, too much so. But like, actually, was that a part of Amy's job description, was to help document processes and stuff, or did she just take a liking to it? And
she just took it. She just took it on. That wasn't really.
What was her official role?
That was another one of those situations where it's like, okay, I'm spending too much time doing this, so I need to hire somebody to take this task. And that task was really just receiving.
Whoa!
And then took on ordering, and then said, "This system isn't working," and she just started kind of putting things into place.
Damn.
And you're
all right.
Like, Angel's in the outfield. Amy's in the outfield. That's awesome.
Then she moved on.
Oh.
So no more Amy, but we got to keep the procedures.
Do you think then there's some sort of part-time role or like there's something there then that, at that size where it's like, you know, you should hire someone that could, that is process or procedure minded or really cares about that or is very detail oriented to be able to, and maybe it's a full-time thing, or maybe it's like, hey, I will pay you a premium for 6 months just to, you know, basically live here, work here, document everything and just dial it all in. Because it sounds like that was a huge stepping stone for you guys.
That was a tremendous stepping stone. I think that every shop should invest in that, to be honest. And now, fast forward, we're at a new point where we need to more fine-tune our processes and procedures. And we've just hired Printavo to come do, I guess you guys call it a boot camp.
Oh, okay. It's Marcotte probably coming out.
Yeah, Marcotte's coming out?
Yeah, he's coming here in 2 weeks.
Oh, right.
You're going to have a lot of fun. Yeah, him and Nick Wood from GXS will be here.
Oh boy.
Oh, double or nothing.
That's Nick Wood and Matt Marcotte in West Palm Beach. That's a tornado.
Love it.
What are you most excited for them to do?
So it looks like we're doing a little bit too much work by not using a lot of the features that Printavo uses. Our process now, there's a lot of steps, there's a lot of clicks. And already on a couple of Zoom calls with Matt, he's been able to help streamline some of these processes with a few less quicks, a few automations. So hopefully we can add in some more integrations and some information goes out to departments a little bit differently. Because right now, all of the information that comes in for every job, whether it's direct to garment, DTF, embroidery, screen print, that information has to manually be given to each of those departments. It is still through Printavo, but there's a lot of steps that we take to make sure each department gets that. And streamlining that automation will definitely help us a lot. Less missed opportunities, I think. So, like I said, fine-tuning the procedures and automations that Printavo uses, I think, is going to really help us get to the next level.
Yeah, we bring Matt Marcotte in about once a year to do a tune-up, and every time he just spends an entire day and a half.
Change the tires, rotate them out.
Rotate them, check the air filters. He's like, dude, do you know that you're not using Power Schedule this way? Like, I just changed Milo's world, and I was like, oh, sick. It's really important. I think you're going to absolutely love that. That's going to be super cool, and I'm super excited to hear about that. What metrics do you, like, as a business owner with 30 employees, several million dollars of business, right? What are you looking at every day? Like, what are your knobs and controls? Like, what do you check? What are the metrics that are important to you?
You know, I mean, I check the schedule of what's gonna get printed, and then I always, you know, try to look at it later that day or the next day and make sure that those jobs did get printed, make sure that, you know, we're hitting deadlines for some big clients, whether it's a project I put in the system or a sales rep put in the system. You know, we want to make sure that that's going out. Some other metrics, you know, money, again, financial.
Like, you know, what specific on financials that you're looking at? Like, do you check the bank every morning? Do you check your deposits? Like, if I were to be a fly on the shelf?
I'll tell you my exact thing. In the morning, probably before the sun even comes up, I've checked, you know, the bank balance. And I've probably skimmed through yesterday's credit card statement, make sure there's nothing funky on there. You know, some of these vendors out here try to sneak some stuff in on you. We make sure to keep that out of the equation. And then I'll check, you know, what yesterday's deposits were. Make sure that's all going smooth. When I get a little free time later, you know, I'll look through the system and see, you know, what clients still need to pay, so we know where our accounts receivables at. You know, and then I often decide, hey, what are we going to buy today? So maybe that's a bad habit, but there's the DTF machine in the office. We have a copperhead being delivered on the second week of December. We bought one of those at the show in Vegas.
Are you ever looking at forward sales? Like, this is what we sold yesterday, this is what we need to sell today stay on pace. Like, how do you look at historical data? Do you have like your own trackers and stuff?
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, I have a bookkeeper that she's running numbers for me all the time because I always want to see, you know, where we were at certain dates last year to certain dates this year. So I always do keep an eye on that. So we can kind of project because we know what the incline's been in revenue, you know, month to month and year to year. So we can kind of project what we have coming at certain times, you know, like when school goes back, we know August is going to be nuts because there's a lot of school stuff that we do or things like that. So yeah, I look at those numbers.
Do you feel like you have to push your sales team to like, hey, this is what you did yesterday, this is what this is worth? Or does everything just kind of flow? Are you guys just inundated with work?
No, they're into it. They're into it. We do have a sales group chat, and everybody's always kind of in there like, hey, I just closed blah, 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 blah. $5,000. I just closed blah, 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 blah. Checks in the mail, 10 grand or, you know, so whatever Steven, it is.
You always share those, the sales Slack channel.
I'm just curious.
You know, sometimes it's like, all right, guys, go in, figure out what quotes are out, get these people to pay. You know, if it's a tight month, maybe, you know, a quote that's been sitting there for 2 weeks, like reach out to the client, see what the numbers got to get the deal closed. So yeah, we do communicate like that. But for the most part, our salespeople are, they're driven to get stuff sold.
Are you their sales leader?
I guess I would be.
Do you have a layer of management that like pushes them?
No, there's no layer of management in sales. I guess it'd be me at the top of that, along with the other two owners.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting? I was thinking about asking you, what were the different, you know, really important roles that you created for the business that really helped you level up the business and the company? But then at the same time, I don't think you thought receiving would have been a pivotal role, but it was the person that actually changed it. You know, it wasn't that you created receiving. It was like that Amy was just a beast and just took on a lot more. And she was just, you know, very proactive. Like, does that, and this is kind of for you too, Steven, like, does that mean that you're really trying to, granted, I'm sure she grew out of just the receiving role. It sounds like that was bigger than what she wanted to accomplish. But like, does that mean you're trying to really hunt for those A players for almost as many roles as you can? Or like, cause it's tough, right? If it's a very repetitive role, I'm not sure that that's a good fit for someone who wants to take on a ton more and be very proactive. I mean, Steven, do you think, like, was that a lucky pick on Justin's part? We're going to do a little third person here first. And then, or are you really trying to look for type A's for as many roles as possible?
Okay. If I were to take Justin's position for a sec, I want to try and get in your head and see if I can answer this, how you would answer it. And you let me know if I'm right or wrong. Earlier in a company, you're hiring desperately 10, 15 employees. You're just looking for studs or studettes. And this person,
I was just looking for hands.
Okay. And yeah. So like, you're just like, okay, you're good. You're responsible. You're hardworking. You're smart. You can come in and do this. I don't think Justin was looking for a head of operations that's going to create processes, procedures, and all this stuff. And it just so happened that he found out this employee could do that and was able to elevate her into that. Right. Is that what it sounds like?
Ding, ding, ding. Yep. 100%. That is exactly what happened.
And is that because you hired, now, if you were to go back in time, would you have hired for what Amy's role became earlier?
I didn't know that was what I needed. So no, I knew I needed somebody for receiving.
Right.
You know,
and that's what I'm saying.
At that time, that position was only one person. I now have three full-time people.
But it turned out to be such a game changer. That's what I'm thinking. Like, is it, you know, are you trying to find those at least B to A players, even for the roles that you may think are very repetitive and require a lower level of skill, because you don't know what may come out of it and they can just totally just crush the shit out of it? Or is that the wrong thinking and you just need hands?
Well, now we're a little more fine-tuned in our hiring processes. We're using, you know, like Indeed to find people that have experience in certain departments. And let me ask you guys real quick. I feel like the hardest positions to fill in the company are receiving, like people that can count. It's not that simple. Like we hire and get rid of people in that department all the time, more so than any other department. Maybe every other department combined, we've gone through more employees with the receiving department. We do have one person that's in charge of that department that oversees the whole thing. But as far as just the people there receiving and counting and checking things in, even with any apps that we have in place or detailed work orders, it's still a very problematic department.
I would ask, and yeah, to be able to answer that question. So our receiving department is one of our strongest. We have Barry and Tim who have been there for a minute, and they are super anal organized. Shout out Barry and Tim if you're listening to this. So that is not an issue that we have. But I think the question I would ask is, if I were an employee going to your shop on my first day in the receiving department, would my training feel like I was going to a Starbucks, or would my training feel like I was going to a lemonade stand?
I'm probably somewhere in the middle, because we do have procedures. I'm sure Starbucks training is very, very thorough. Very, very thorough. Yeah. We do have procedures in place. We do have tools. We do have, you know, guides for everything. So I wouldn't say that it's a lemonade stand, but it might not be a Starbucks. Definitely not. Like,
for a second, if you use the rest of your week after you go to the gym and get steak, to just work on turning your receiving department training into Starbucks training, and that's all you did for the next 48 hours, you just got crazy about it. Celsius, you name it, whatever, just caffeine. Would your receiving department, and you spent time training them and practicing the same way Starbucks employees practice what type of orders to make, would your receiving department turn into a machine? Like, could you turn it into an edge, actually?
Maybe.
I have really, really talented employees in there, but I don't think it's a Starbucks by any means. But they run a tight ship, you know, like I don't, but that's what I was saying is, like, if you actually were like, oh my gosh, this is everything for me, and I just spent all this time making it like the Starbucks training, could it actually turn into your best department? Right? Cause you just said it, like, they just have to count. Why is it so freaking hard to count? I would be awful in receiving, by the way.
Yeah, you just zone out. I'm just like, God damn.
The problem with me is that I can't stand there and count some shirts, and then I get pulled to do something else. Then I come back, I don't know where I was counting. So yeah, I'm too, like you said, squirrel. I'm too everywhere.
So it's like, you almost have to create a training that would work for yourself. And if it could work for you, then it can work for everyone. Right. But it's interesting that that's your pain point. Like, for some shops, it could be quality control. For some shops, it could be reclaim. For some shops, it could be customer service, right? There's obviously like something there. I don't know, Bruce, what do you think?
I like it. What, Justin, what's next for 2025? What are you thinking about?
So what's on the table is we're spread out across 5 warehouse bays in this commercial complex, which it's nice here, but logistically it's tough being in separate buildings for different deco methods. And, we're trying to buy a building. It's tough here in South Florida. So we're trying to buy a building to get into. Right now we're a little over 8,000, maybe 9,000 square feet. We want to get into a building that's 10, maybe 12,000. I feel like if I was one floor plan of 10 or 12,000, it would feel like double the space of the 8 or 9,000 that I have now. Being able to, like, right now, every auto press I have has its own dryer because it's in a separate warehouse bay.
So these are like separated by walls, yeah, or separated by other businesses?
Separated
or both.
Okay. So all of my screen print is together. Embroidery, DTF, and DTG are across the parking lot.
Gotcha. So you're just the crazy tenant. You're crazy. You're
definitely getting steps in. We have golf carts. We have golf carts running them back and forth. So I feel like our operation could definitely be more efficient if we were under one roof. So we're hoping that we have a year left on all of our leases. So we're hoping that we can secure a building to buy in the next 6, 7, maybe 8 months. And then we're going to move and be under one roof. Then, I mean, that's the main thing. If we're going to stay here for a little while longer, you know, we'll have to sign new leases and jump over the hurdles of the new pricing, because all of our leases right now are pre-COVID. So our rent is going to jump tremendously with new market leases. But I think that if I were to stay here, the next piece of equipment that I'm going to buy is an auto reclaim for sure.
Would you have bought that DTF machine that you said is just like running in your office to keep the heads wet?
Would I have bought it? Yeah. This is our third machine. The technology in DTF is just moving so fast. I anticipate to probably have to buy a new, whatever the newest machine is, like every year.
Oh, so we already use it. It's just like located in your office.
We were using it. We started with a single head Epson, and then we went to a dual head Epson, and then now we have a 5 head Epson. And then first of the year, we should be getting our 6-head Epson. So right now, this one, I don't have anywhere else to set this 2-head printer up. So I don't know what I'm going to do with it, if I'm going to sell it or what. But we have to run it every day a little bit to make sure that it keeps functioning properly. So sticking it in the corner of my office was the only place to put it, really.
Last week, I had 4 DTFs running. Then I had to order 6 new print heads for $6,000. Today, I only have 2 DTFs running, and I had to order a main board yesterday for $1,400, and I just got a message that it didn't work.
Oh, that sucks.
That sounds like one of those, like, I thought you were going to, like, what a woodchuck chuck, what a DTF.
But that's this game. That's this business we're in. I mean, sometimes every single piece of equipment I have is running. And then some days we're down a DTG printer, we're down an embroidery machine, we're down, it's just, you know how it is. There's, if you have 4 DTF machines, there's probably some days they're all running. And then that once in a while, 3 of them are down.
Yeah.
It's frustrating.
Justin, if you were to look at your business 4 years, 5 years down the road in a sweet spot, right? Like, some people are like, I want to take my business to $100 million. Some people are like, this is how many employees I want to have. If you could draw it on a postcard, what would your business look like in a dream situation?
And your life in your business.
Yeah, and your life, like the steak and the eggs and the working out, like that's important too.
Right, right. I think that, so in 5 years, if we could double the revenue of the business and maybe only increase the staff by 50-60%, I would be super, super happy. And I think that's achievable at this point, because now we have so much equipment and we can produce so much. I feel like we could probably add 40-50% in revenue with the same staff that we have now, maybe just extending some hours a little bit. So I think in 5 years, doubling our revenue is very possible.
What do you do in that world?
I mean, owner operator, I'm sure I will still come to work just about every day.
You'll grill steaks. I mean,
but like, even like more specifically, like, what do you like, is it totally sort of very high level now, or is it like sort of still a combination of how you think about things now, more finance, sales driven? I guess it's hard to say since it's far in the future, but maybe it's a question of what would you want to spend a lot of your time on?
I mean, I do like dealing with some of the bigger clients. I still deal with some of the smaller clients. I mean, I do like sales. I really like sales. I like the chase, the hunt, the art of the deal. I do like that. If we got to that size, I'm sure I would have more people in place for sales, where my role with sales would be less. It would be kind of meeting the client, hooking the client, and then passing it off to a salesperson, where now it's meeting the client, getting them all set up in the system. And once a big client is running for a little while, maybe, you know, 4, 5, 6 months, a couple big reorders, then pass them off. So I might do that a lot sooner in that situation. I do like making deals on equipment and figuring out, you know, the puzzle of how are we going to add something here or something there. So I definitely still want to be involved in that. Maybe I would leave a little bit earlier, you know, if I had that many employees. He likes that. He likes that idea. I see him smiling.
I just want to see you take a Ferris Bueller's day off more. You should do that. They're fun. You deserve it too. And if you're listening to this and you haven't taken a day off, take a day off. Bruce, you got anything else?
I love it. Thanks, Justin. I appreciate sharing the transparency. I mean, I think, yeah, it's always cool to look back at lessons learned, right? Because it's the only time where I feel like it helps other shops in that role really be able to proactively think about some of the business, right? Because you are, like, we all get so wound up in the day to day, but it's hard to sometimes like poke out and see it. So anyway, Justin, I appreciate it. I'm glad you guys are all good from all that crazy weather stuff and tornadoes and like.
Me too.
Seems
Me
like
too.
Florida is just in the news only for just extreme weather now. But
yeah.
But thank
Wait,
you.
Wait, we'll be in the news again with the election next week. We're always in the news for that.
I'm sure. Yeah. RipPrint. Justin, how do people reach out? Is it Justin@ripprint.com?
It's jrip@ripprint.com. Our Instagram is probably the best way. It's just RipPrint, RIPPRINT. You can also find us on Facebook, RipPrint Custom Clothing and Apparel.
Amazing. Justin, thanks so much for joining us, Print Hustlers. We'll see you guys on the next episode. Have a great week. Thanks so much for listening. Hopefully that was informative. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to like. Don't forget to hit the bell for notifications if you enjoyed this video. If you enjoy all the stuff we're putting out, it's really helpful. We love to just be able to see it. That means that we're doing a good job. To subscribe, hit the bell for notifications, and hit the like button. And I'll see you in the next episode. Bye.